Well, good afternoon. I think first we should do introductions around. I'm so happy to see Zen Center people being at Jikoji and joining us for Sesshin. You're very welcome as much as you will or can. So Joe said he would be coming around too, so let's do introductions, Zach.
Sadiq.
David.
John.
Chris.
Gabby.
Mindy.
Laura.
Paula.
Ronaldin.
Dennis.
Bob.
Sarah.
Carolyn.
And Angie. So, Jonna, you're here for a while. Is that so?
Could you speak? I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah. Chris will get it. You're right. I'm trying to project, but... I was saying you're here for a while.
I just moved in 3 days
ago. Uh-huh. Well, congratulations. Yeah.
It's just, I must say, it's just wonderful to see you. I haven't seen you in years.
It's been a long time. Yes. Well, it's the first day. We have just about accomplished the first day of Sesshin. I must say, everything is going very well. We're eating well. Thank you very much. And it's taking a while to get ourselves ship shape. It will take a few days before we quite know what we're doing. But even so, it's going very well. I'm impressed. I always talk, first of all, in Sesshin about the body, because I think in one way we're struck by being a body, and in another way we're so caught up in our mind, in our heads, that we've forgotten our body, and we're shocked to discover that there is one, and it has... a lot of issues that we often overlook until we come to a place like this where we have to face the issues and face the reality of it. This little sack of bones and blood and breath and lots and lots of thinking. So it takes a few days for the body to agree to this enterprise. At least that's been my experience, that it's surprised to sit down and not be allowed to move. It begins to say, wait a minute, we always get up after a while. But giving it an opportunity, we begin to rest in this position, even though it seems like it's a stretch. Our knees don't like it very much. But after a while, the knees begin to agree. And the more we can agree with ourself, the happier we'll be. This is a joyful experience. Long sitting, especially. It's a treat for us to be not only in this beautiful forest with these high hills and the view of the ocean. But the beauty of where we are is nothing compared to the possibility in our own life, our own understanding, our own ability to thoroughly be this, to fulfill this moment by moment, breath by breath. So they're the instructions of a brightness, alignment, relaxation, none of it will be easy in these first days unless you've been sitting already for a few weeks. But we've made a commitment, and the commitment carries us. It's a vow just to be here. And here meaning here. Allowing to be here. So, this old favorite book, Moon in a Dewdrop, is what I brought to share with you. A chapter, a short chapter, that maybe you know. It's Yuibutsu Yobutsu. Butsu meaning Buddha. Yuibutsu Yobutsu. Only Buddha and Buddha. Only. So Dogen is talking here about what they are translating not as enlightenment but as realization, which is a little less intimidating, perhaps. Realization. He says, when you realize Buddha Dharma, you do not think this is realization, just as I expected. You don't think that. Even if you do think so, realization invariably differs from your expectation. So we come to Sesshin almost invariably with some kind of idea about what our experience is going to be, based on past experience. If something really wonderful happened last time, we kind of look for it in some way. Try to find it again. And of course, it's impossible. We'll never find that again. If it was a difficult time, it isn't promised that we will have a difficult time again. Our sitting is not a personal experience so much as it is a surprise coming through from long practice, but we never know. And the less we expect, the less we think we know what we're going to be doing and having and being, the less fraught our sitting is. And the more interesting it is to know that that's how we often spend much of our life, is setting up proposals of how things we think things are going to be, and then being surprised and often disappointed and frustrated because it doesn't come out that way. And certainly that's true in Sesshin. Our expectations really are useless in this place. Coben always said, the only thing you can really achieve and do is not fall off your cushion. Don't fall off your chair. Everything else is a dream. So, Dogen says realization is not like your conception of it. So, realization can't take place as previously conceived. When you realize Buddha Dharma, you do not consider how realization came about. What you think one way or another before realization is not a help for realization. It's kind of disappointing in a way. It'd be nice to be able to project for ourselves some what we would like. That's what we do. We work up a model for ourselves and then hope it comes true. He says, although realization is not like any of our thoughts, any of the thoughts preceding it, this is not because such thoughts are actually bad and could not be realization. Past thoughts in themselves were already realization. But since you were seeking elsewhere, you thought and said that thoughts cannot be realized, cannot be realization. So it's what we project that creates the condition. What we expect creates it. However, it is worth noticing that what you think one way or another is not a help for realization. If realization came forth by the power of your prior thoughts, it would not be trustworthy. Realization does not depend on thoughts, but comes forth far beyond them. Realization is helped only by the power of realization itself. Know that then there is no delusion and there is no realization. In other words, this is a practice of surrender. And because we're doing it in this way of silence, and not moving, allowing no distractions, not cultivating distractions, that realization, our life itself, is allowed to be what it wants to be. And then we don't have to put a label on what we think it is or is not, but allow it to be what it is. It's hard. We come with so many struggles and so many troubles. And the hope is that we can solve our problems in this way. It's not so much about solving problems, but experiencing and seeing what's really here. We have very big ideas, either that we are extremely doing extremely well, or that we will never do well at all. Often the mind is a roller coaster of wanting to be the best and being afraid of being the worst. Measuring success, judging how well we're doing, especially compared to others. So that too is an opportunity, knowing that, to really pay attention to how it is that we live together in this situation. It's a wonderful practice because we are so intimate for a week. And many things come up in relationship that are often a surprise to us. Oh, is that how I used to always measure myself against Sonia Margulies? Did you know her? Very powerful woman. Really big deal she was. And I just felt like a mouse around her. I was always comparing myself to Sonia. And then the more I sat and the more I noticed that I was doing that, it seemed sillier and sillier. I thought, oh, she's just a mom like me. She's just a one of Coben's women. And she actually is very wonderful, a truly wonderful person. So, noticing how our mind is working and allowing it to be the way it is. We don't have to be upset because we're not perfect. In this little talk of Dogen, he talks not about purity, but about undividedness. That if we try to polish ourselves up and be as perfect as we can, which is what we've been encouraged to do all our life, it's always a discouragement because we never can achieve it. It's never good enough. But that's a very superficial and useless way of relating with each other and with ourselves. But to consider the undividedness of our relationship with ourselves, because often we're divided. There's the one who wants to do this and the one that doesn't. There's the one who knows how bad she is and the one who knows how really good he is. And then they're in conflict of some kind. It's often divided. We're often in conversation with ourselves and with others in that judgmental way. And the undivided way is to drop the judgment and just be one. One in oneself, and also one with the other. And begin to truly practice the undividedness of self and other. That's our deepest mystery. And that's our most important and really at this point, desperate struggle as human beings to find ways to understand ourselves well enough that we are no longer split, no longer in separation. Dogen says, when you have unsurpassed wisdom, you're called Buddha. When a Buddha has unsurpassed wisdom, is called unsurpassed wisdom. That's a very Dogen-like thing to say. Not to know what it is like on this path is foolish. What it is like is to be unstained, undivided. To be undivided does not mean that you try forcefully to exclude intention or discrimination, or that you establish a state of non-intention. You can't do it. You can't really push your mind and make it go there. Being undivided cannot be intended or discriminated at all. It's like meeting a person and not considering what he looks like. Also, it's like not wishing for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. It's not really hard. Spring has the feeling of spring, and autumn has the look of autumn, and there's no escaping it. So when you want spring or autumn to be different from what it is, notice that it can only be as it is. So that's your homework. Just notice. Things are as they are. You can't make spring into autumn. It won't go. That which is accumulated is without self. He's talking about us, about anything. We're all each an accumulation of stuff. Very beautifully and almost magically arranged in some sort of elaboration that makes it possible for us to live and breathe as we do. We don't even know quite how. We're an accumulation without self. We're a bunch of stuff, you could say. Or what I used to say when I was in the hospital, I thought, I'm just an electromechanical piece of meat. And it works, you know. It goes as long as it goes. Without self. The reason is that not one of the four great elements or the five skandhas can be understood as self or identified as self. Therefore, the form of the flowers or moon in your mind should not be understood as being self, even though you may think it is self. Still, when you clarify that there is nothing to be disliked or longed for, then the original face is revealed by your practice of the way. When you clarify there is nothing to be disliked or longed for, the original face is revealed by your practice of the way. So for Zazen especially, this is essential. And if you can keep this in mind, or let it keep you in mind, it will help you. Are there questions?
Andrew, I was noting my mind was racing, so I noted what I was sort of thinking, and I just tried noting, you know, whatever, you know, thinking or whatever. But I noticed that line between, for me, I was surprised. I just thought maybe I'd be noting, but I noticed there was a tinge of judgment in my noting.
Hmm.
And so just sort of like a neutral noting.
Just let it go. Zach?
Is that then all that I am?
What do you think?
It feels that way.
Do you get up and brush your teeth in the morning? Yeah, Buddha did too. You have friends. You're not nothing. The self that you're not is a permanent self. A self that doesn't change. A self that won't die. That kind of self you can't possibly be. There isn't any such thing. Anything in the universe is either coming together or falling apart. And at this point, we have come together. So you're a together self. You're Zach. And the more you can be Zach, the more you can boil yourself down until you're a really rich brew, the more you have to give to the world. The more you can help other people. So it's not that you eliminate yourself in order to be a pure practicer. It's the opposite. But if you do it saying, it's the great me, Zach, I'm doing all this great stuff, look at me. That me doesn't exist. That's bullshit. And you know it in your own mind, in your heart. So this is about following your heart and not worrying about who you are, because you're already. You don't have to worry about trying to become something. In fact, you're the best. And that's why we sit together, so that we can support each other. That's really important. So I'm glad you're here. We can hold each other all the way around. Yeah. Yes.
Your talk today reminded me of a short saying that I really like a lot, and have shared it with a few folks from time to time, and I think about it a lot. And I think over the last 6 months or so, I realized that the more I think about it, the less I really get it. And it's the one that goes, before enlightenment, I chopped wood and carried water. After enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Could you help me with that a little?
I can't.
Um,
you just have to carry on chopping wood and carrying water, or chopping water and carrying wood, however works best for you, and let it teach you. You can't figure it out. The more you think about it, the less clear it will become.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Just carry on. Chris?
It's really obvious to everyone, but it just keeps all these layers and layers of the way I discover self-judgment is also projected onto others. And it goes really deep, and so that was really encouraging to hear. More, it's about just being who you are, being what you are, and just watching all the song and dance around it.
Yes, if you start judging your judgmentalness, and then you can judge that. And then you have to judge that, of course, because it's even worse.
I'm really good at that.
Right. Well, one thing that helps a lot is to really sit down with your idioticness and just confess to yourself and completely admit it, 100%. You know, I'm not this person I wanted to be. I will never be as best as I could be. I'm just this idiot, just like everybody else. And then find how you can enjoy yourself. The parts of it that are silly and funny and fun and not so special. We aren't special. We're really not. Try as we might. You know, there's always somebody more special than we are, like Sonia. You know?
What really helped is lately is just be curious, just be really curious about the whole.
Mm. That does help. A scientific mind, which you have already, and that is very, very helpful. Just say, what is this? And leave it open and allow not knowing. Because in truth, if you go deep enough, we don't know. Yeah.
Can I go back to my noting a minute? In other words, if I... is what's pouring down, the clothes are sticking to me, the word hot might come.
That would
what
be.
I'm saying is, I'm just having it hot, there's this tinge of judgment I notice with myself. You know, it's like, you know, I guess it's the attract wanting or not wanting it. So I guess I have a lot to get to learn about noting, or maybe that's not actually such a good practice.
It's not especially emphasized in our practice. It's useful sometimes if your mind is a whirl. But it's also useful to work your way into just letting the mind find its own peace. And allow that peace to permeate your body. And just be that. And don't worry about what you're thinking or what you're feeling. Just be it. And be peaceful with it. Yeah. Laura?
So, if I'm in that, and I'm trampling all over the precepts in my mind.
Mm. You're bound to. The precepts are not to polish us up so that we shine. The precepts are to continually remind us what idiots we are. Among other things. We kill, we lie, we steal, we break all the precepts all the time. We cannot help it. It isn't, they aren't laid out for us in order to make us not kill all the many thousand million beings in our eyebrows. We can't help killing those people. We can't help killing the carrot and eating it. We need to do it. But the precepts are showing us how excessive we can be about all of our life unless we pay attention. It gives us an ability to be conscious about how we behave, how we enact our life. Usually we're just blindly doing all of these things. We just gobble our food and we get a great big house and we do all these things that we're empowered to do without really thinking about what it means. Or we can engage with the precepts and really notice how much killing do we have to do. How much truth can we find in our words? How much can we be kind to ourselves? All of those things are to help us, not to make us perfect. Otherwise, you just feel terrible all the time. Because we can never say the complete truth. We're always lying in a way. You know, we don't own anything. So we're always taking things and saying, it's mine. It's really not. You know, as soon as we're gone, it belongs to somebody else. I mean, it's all our way. Our unconscious way is so messy. And it's just a way of keeping us awake to and helping us to live a wholesome life. The kind of life that we would like to live. Modest, humble, simple. That's all. David?
On the theme of what is it, my teacher in Dorsan used to say that very vigorously to me, as if I had to get the answer.
This is my Zumi.
My
Zumi.
What is it? I've spent decades trying to find it. Nice to hear you encourage me to give it up.
I think it's right over there to your left.
<See that? laughs>
So,
it's hard to accept me.
Yeah.
And not
Yeah. But that's assuming you know how to judge. Oh, no, you're not. You don't know beans about it. That's the problem. Your criteria is all wrong.
Yeah, but Laura says.
Oh, well.
We'll talk,
right. At the wedding altar. Well, maybe on that note we would carry on with the Zazen. Thank you all. We'll chant the Bodhisattva vows.
Unsurpassable, I vow to become.